Welcome back to the Startup Showcase. I'm Scott Catoon. We are sitting here live in the Allstate Showcase studio with Ravine Gandhi. Ravine, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
So right off the bat, I mean, we have to say you've been on the podcast a handful of times. You are one of the, I think, one of the more interesting investors in Chicago, because a lot of times, you know, I'm going to say this, not just investors in startup tech, because a lot of the investors that I have met with are either career VC, their entire career they've spent, most of them start off as traders. They worked 185 hours a week at Goldman Sachs. They got worn out, and then they took a 12-month hiatus across the world, and they came back with a pot full of gold. And now they're investing in startups. And you come from a different background in this. You actually ran a company. You were the CEO of a company that was recently acquired, if I'm not mistaken. And the one little fun fact that I'm going to set you up with, I'm teeing you up here. Don't get a big header. I'm just teeing you up. Is that one of the products you guys were working on is in just about every household of every listener on the show right now.
Yes. So I think the company you're talking about is GMM Nonstick Coatings.
That would be the one.
Yes. So every day, 40 million Americans use my product, which is a coating for cookware, bakeware, and small electrical appliances. I started this company about 10 years ago. We built it up. We're very global. We have 300 people. We were kind of all over the world. And like you said, we were acquired about 5 months ago by a $7 billion monster called SDK. So that's 80% of my day job. I'm still the CEO. I have to say, I've seen this movie before in terms of having been acquired and living through the cultural sort of merger. And these guys have been amazing. It's been about 6 months since our deal closed. I've got a great gig right now. I'm still CEO. I'm deploying about $200 million to $300 million in capital, basically buying businesses in my industry. And amazingly, they're letting me co-invest with them on deals. So it's sort of the best of both worlds.
That's a rarity.
Yes.
I was going to say, because we talk to, now granted, well, I mean, it's, what, you said $7 billion company. So I mean, we're talking to companies all the time, Capital Ones of the world that are, you know, massive. And they are very interested in acquiring local companies and then using those companies to acquire other companies in that same sort of stead. Like, this is not something that's actually happening, but using it as an example, like Spot Hero recently acquired in New York, New York based parking app. And it was sort of the kind of thing where it was like, well, that was an obvious acquisition. It was essentially us acquiring a market, less a company. And the bigger companies usually are not a big fan of playing ball like that. So for them to do that with you and let you carry the, you know, take a carry, and it's pretty incredible.
No, it's one of the reasons why I decided to say yes to this acquisition, because again, having been through it, it's such a value having the experience of having gone through M&A before as a kind of a founder, and sometimes things don't work out. And yep. I've had situations in the past where they didn't work out. So in this case, when they said, you know, going forward, we're never going to sell this entity. You know, we want to build it, but we're correctly all about the people, you know, and they like myself, they like my partner, and they know what it takes to keep us motivated. So that's something I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, well, I guess there's not really a better person to have in that. I guess as I phrase this poorly. I feel like you are the perfect person for that spot to be in, because you are an investor and you're an entrepreneur in your mindset. And I think if you were in a normal situation where it was I don't want to say a career CEO, because that sounds like a career politician, but like if you're a person who went all the way up the ranks, worked your way up to it, and you didn't spend time as an entrepreneur building, you didn't spend time as an investor, would they ask the questions and put themselves, they being the CEO, to be in that spot that you're in? I don't know that they would.
I think you're probably right. The four key words, skin in the game, right? You have to be, you know, pinned to this business. And for me,
they knew that though. They saw that and you were like, if I don't put this opportunity out there for you, that I will lose the skin in the game that you had.
I think so. Cause obviously they did the deal. And, one of the board members was just in town last weekend, and I hosted him, and he was asking me, you know, how are your other ventures? I mean, they're clearly aware that I spend most of my time running GMM, but I also have other VC investments, like you've said, and they have no issue with it because they ultimately see that we're growing, you know, our company is doing just fine. But in this 21st century, it is possible to walk down the street and chew gum at the same time.
You know, it's very true. Well, sometimes depends. We're looking outside of the studio here. We can actually take a tally on how many people are chewing and walking, but the one thing I would add with that is, and this is, you know, I'd love your input on this. I feel like when I look at companies, particularly younger CEOs, and I don't mean to be like biased against age, but I just see sort of a different capacity to juggle multiple things or spin more plates with the younger generation. We're just sort of brought up like playing on iPad, then we're playing a Nintendo, then we're playing, it was like 50 things on at once. I actually am a little bit worrisome, I think, when I look at some of the CEOs and people that are just focused on just one thing and they don't even have any other interest, or they're not looking around, because I feel like you're just asking to get sucked into a vacuum.
Right. On one hand, you want there to be relentless passion.
Sure.
And sometimes you want them to have blinders on because you want them to work, you know, and 100 hours a week. But on the other hand, you don't want them to create a negative self-fulfilling prophecy, which is, you know, this is the one thing that I need to do. And one day you just say, look, it's not working. You know, you got to get your head out of the sand here and look around, and you might need to pivot, because so many companies, what ends up making them a $1 billion company isn't the initial idea. It might be the pivot. So you got to strike that balance. And all I can say is it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other funny thing is that we're a lot in tech. I mean, obviously, well, I mean, it's not that GMM isn't tech. I mean, it is.
We've got 60 R&D scientists working. Yeah. We're very tech.
Very, very tech. I think one of the things that we're starting to see now with constant tech is, and I can't even remember who the person was that we were speaking with us on the show, but I have often said that if you are not 2 months past and current, 2 months ahead, 3 years ahead, and 5 years ahead in like the way that you view the world, you're going to lose, because you've got to see all, you've got to be able to see it. And that's where it's like, you've got to have your eyes glued to the ground and blinders on for sprints. And then you've got to be able to pull out of that sprint and look around you and see, what is everyone else doing? And am I sprinting in the same direction?
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting you mentioned the point that like in Chicago, many people who are, you know, full-time VCs, this is kind of all they've done, which is great. And
We're going to need them at some point.
I mean, they're literally some of the smartest people I know. They serve on a lot of boards that I've invested in. They're great people. But for me, I like coming to it through the lens of an operator, right? I have to hire people. I have to fire people. I have to constantly run a company that has hundreds of employees. And when I sit down with a 24-year-old or a 28-year-old potential tech CEO, I feel like you're looking at them apples to apples because it's, does this guy have what it takes? And one of the skills that I've seen in the best deals that I've been involved in is, and I'm sort of age agnostic on this, the more weight that you put on a person, they should get better. And it's a very ironic thing, because some people, they raise their first round and they raise $5 or $10 million in the A round, and they think it's, you know, that's the exit. It's like, that's not even the beginning. What's going to happen when you raise $50 million or $100 million, and it's not you and your 6 employees? Now it's you and 80 employees or 100 employees or 1,000 employees. And I find that the best entrepreneurs are, and I don't know how to spot it, but the ones that they continually unfold, and there's more and more depth and more and more layers. And it's really amazing. If you look at the Zuckerbergs and some of these famous examples, that's one thing, but you even see it at a smaller scale.
Oh, I totally agree. I'm a huge fan of when, especially, and we try to do it with Technori Showcase, just like asking questions and asking people to do a lot of work in a real short amount of time. I like to throw pressure and pressure pack situations at people early on to see how they handle it. It's not to say that you're not a good person or a good business person, you won't be successful in life. That's not what we're saying. It's just maybe the CEO, the full load on your shoulders, maybe not the spot for you.
Only decisions made under pressure reveal character.
100%.
Period.
Absolutely.
Anyone can sit there and shoot a bunch of free throws, you know, at night. But when the cameras are on, I mean, those are the people whose names we know.
Yep.
And it's the same thing in business. It just because you can work 80 hours a week, that might be a lot of activity, but not a lot of progress. Can you work 80 hours a week when you just get hit with the lawsuit, when your best employee maybe defected to your competition, when, you know, you have to do a lot of innovation? So for me, pressure is the crucible that people have to be able to have demonstrably handled.
I couldn't agree more. And if it sounds like you know what you're talking about, and you've talked a lot about this, it's because you have. And you do. You are on CNBC, I think, every time I turn it on, quite honestly. It's either you or it's LaSalle Network. That's the only two people I ever see.
I think that the definition of the word hyperbole, we just heard what that actually means. Yes, I do CNBC occasionally, but it's certainly not that ubiquitous.
No. I'm kind of giving you a hard time, because LaSalle Network is on there like every power lunch. I swear to God, Tom Gimbel is on that thing. We're going to have him on this show soon, but he's got to come on this show because he's too busy flying back and forth to CNBC power lunch. The other thing that you do, though, is you just wrote a piece on the scary truths of entrepreneurship for the Chicago Tribune, which I had up on my computer, and I think it's, I don't even know, my computer's gone right now. But tell us a little bit about that. We only have a few minutes, but I kind of wanted to get your gist on that and sort of, if you don't mind, put that in the tense of like right now today, what you see as a VC. Put the VC hat on.
So the genesis of that article was actually a couple months ago. I got asked to go down to University of Illinois, where I went to undergrad, to do a talk about my career. And I'd never done that. You know, in my mid-40s now, it's the first time I've done this kind of retrospective thing. So I was thinking about how do I want to frame it. And what I did was I structured it around four deals I'd done in my career. A family business that I started at, which I ended up selling, a pharmaceutical company that I did a recap on that we took public, GMM, which obviously I started and grew and sold, and Kimi that I've talked about with you before. So these four deals. And what I did is I talked about lessons from each of these deals. I did about 15 minutes per deal. And what was interesting was I love, you know, talking to the students about this kind of thing, but the Q&A was with a bunch of undergrads and graduate students. And basically they all said, these are great stories, but you know, how hard is it really to build a business? And they would give me a little vignette about their specific situation. So I wrote this article kind of with that in mind, saying, here are some really ugly truths about entrepreneurship, because people like to glamorize these things. They want to say, you know, wow, you know, you could be a billionaire or something. But that article was very unglamorous. And I basically said, it's harder than you think. It's going to kind of be a nightmare potentially from a personal life, from a professional life. It might, you know, might ruin you.
Probably all of the above.
But the irony is, it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
And it's one of these weird things where I think entrepreneurship is ultimately very self-selecting. The people who are attracted to it and the people who are good at it, they can't describe it, but they just kind of make it work. And I think what I tried to hit at in the article is, don't be fooled by the mirage of riches and wealth and everything. If it doesn't come from within you and you aren't motivated for the right reasons, you're going to have a lot of issues.
Said this a million times on stage. If you're not obsessed with the practice of it and you're just waiting for the goal at the end, you're going to lose. Game's over. You've got to be all about what it takes to get there day to day and just grind it out and be and happy with that, regardless of the outcome.
No, completely. One interesting thing I've probably never mentioned is I've joined one of my good friends co-investing in a lot of his deals. He's a veteran. He went to West Point and he has his own little VC fund that I'm on the board of now. And we only invest in startups that were founded by someone who came out of the military academies, you know, the Coast Guard Academy, the Naval Academy, West Point, and who have deployed. So, you know, talk about real pressure, like real live bullets and pressure. They come back, they start businesses. And not that they're going to be more successful than anyone. Okay. I mean, business is really hard for anyone, but the theory is that when you know that you've contended with pressure, it's really interesting.
Well, Ravine, thank you so much for coming in now. We'll have to come back in again and talk more about that because that sounds actually very incredible. We'll be back after this break with Lancelot founder Julia McInnes. Please stay tuned.